forget your hat, leave your worries on the doorstep. Just direct your feet to the sunny side of the street. Can't you hear a pitter-pat? And that happy tune is your step. Life can be so sweet on the sunny side of the street. I used to walk in the shade with those blues on the rail, but I'm not afraid. This rover,
thank God it's Friday,
crossed over. If I never have a cent, I'll be rich as Rockefeller. Gold dust at my feet on the sunny side of the street.
Welcome to the Large Morning Show in the afternoon here on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris, your 20% host, giving 100% of the effort. And joined, of course, by Dan Strauss and Ian Geis. Hi, guys. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Fabulous today,
I'm
Paul.
Asking that like I don't know, like we haven't been sitting here for a half hour talking without actually talking about what we're going to do on the show, because that would involve preparation.
Just you always start the show with some pleasantries.
Yeah, so it's just...
But we didn't really ask, hey, how you doing? How you doing? Yeah. We just kind of came in.
You know why we don't talking. We don't care.
No. Yeah, we always just kind of assume it's the thing is...
have you ever run into somebody and you said, how are you? And they tell you?
Oh, that's the worst.
Oh,
you never want any real answer with that question.
I was home all day, and then the kids came in. Shut up!
Yeah. See, they don't really. But you don't want that. You just want, oh, I'm fine. How are you?
That's all you want.
That's all you want.
Fake answer.
But I do that every once in a while. When somebody says, how are you? I say, oh, I'm a little gassy. I had some stuff earlier today. It's just killing me.
Stop. Okay. Yeah. All I meant was hello. That's all I meant. I said, how's it going? I didn't want to know how it's going.
There are very few times I am fine or good when I say fine or good when somebody asks me that question.
Right.
But you just don't go into it.
Every human being walking around on this planet has crap going on in their life that they don't need to share with anybody.
No.
And we don't. Mm-mm. Don't be one of those who feels like, well, when somebody asks me the casual, how you doing, you actually answer them.
How you doing? Well, it burns when I pees. Other than that, I'm fine.
Everything's good.
Yeah.
And by the way, there's your lovely picture of Dan Strauss. Apparently has a urine problem and a gas problem. And happy weekend,
day.
Everybody.
That's pretty much every day.
Yeah. I am just back a couple of days ago from a trip to the thriving metropolis of Durant, Oklahoma.
Whoa.
That's right. Hold on, your jealousy.
Whoa.
I know. I went down there because I had been told by friends of mine in the poker community here in St. Louis that this big poker tournament that goes on for a couple of weeks down there, a poker tournament series, draws a lot of people, and there's a lot of action in the cash games because I don't play tournaments anymore. And you should go down there, and the cash games are wild, and you will love playing down there. Not so much.
Did you drive or fly?
I flew to Dallas.
Oh.
I price-lined a car, and I price-lined a motel because I didn't want to stay at the resort, which was like $300 a night or something like that.
I don't understand that anymore with the casinos because they used to offer... Much lower
$49,
rates.
$79,
to get people to stay and play.
You know why I think it is? I think it's because so many of their regulars
getting free rooms.
Are getting comped.
Yeah.
They have to make it up somewhere.
No. They want to make it feel like it's a regular value.
Ah.
Did I ever tell you the story about the prime rib dinners in Las Vegas?
No, but they used to be like $5 or something like that.
My friend Mark, who lives in Los Angeles, used to go to Vegas all the time because he played blackjack. He was a card counter, and he was pretty good at it. And he told me this story from the 1970s. Maybe it was the 80s. I don't know. At one point, two hotel casinos directly across the street from each other both offered a $9.99 prime rib dinner, for which you got a nice chunk of prime rib, a baked potato, a salad, a dessert, and a glass of beer or wine for $9.99. And let's just say that the two of them were the Frontier and the Desert Inn. Neither of them is still there, but okay. So the Frontier for some reason, decided to raise the price of theirs to $10.99. The people at the Desert Inn, the place across the street, complained to their management. Not the people at the Frontier. The people across the street complained, how come I'm getting a $9.99 prime rib dinner here, and they're getting a $10.99? Now, their people are getting it for free. They're getting comped for these meals. So the Desert Inn says, okay, you're right. We have to fix that. And so they changed the price of theirs to $11.99.
Oh, my goodness.
And now the people who are regulars at the Frontier said, how come I'm getting a free $10.99 meal, and they're getting a free $11.99 deal? So they raised theirs to $12.99.
It just kept going back.
Within 6 months, they were both $24.99 for a prime rib, baked potato, salad, dessert, and beer or wine. Same meal, nothing changed. It was $24.99.
Oh.
And that's the same reason the hotel rooms at the casinos aren't that anymore, because the people who get it free want to be getting a really big free value.
Yeah,
the fact that you're getting a nice free room, and most of the casino hotels here are pretty nice. You stay in them, decent room, okay, it's fine. Does it matter to you whether that free room was $89 or $99?
No.
To some people it does.
Yes, obviously.
And so that's what happened.
I guess. But they don't realize, I'm guessing they don't realize that they've paid for that room tenfold.
Of course.
The way
they got comped a free meal was by losing $14,000 at a slot machine.
That's right. But, I got a free room for $300.
That's right.
Yes.
This time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that $14,000 got them several free rooms, and in the course of a year, they got over $500 in free rooms for their $14,000 in losses. But they were having fun, and they had a chance at the jackpot.
Oh, that's right.
All right. And by the way, I love the people who play the slot machines, because they make it possible for the casinos to have poker rooms, which they don't make any money off of.
Yeah.
So they're subsidizing my hobby. Okay. So I fly to Dallas, Southwest. It's an hour and a half. Cheap flight. I price line a car. Get that pretty cheap. I price line a motel room near the resort casino. Resort. Near the casino. It's Durant, Oklahoma. How much of a resort could it be? It's not like I'm going to Bellagio. So I go there, and on the first day, I get there late in the afternoon. There's not much action there. I play for a few hours. Okay, I lost a little bit of money. All right, I'm a little bit tired because I've been traveling. Okay, fine. By the way, it's about a 100-minute drive from Love Field in Dallas to this casino in Durant, Oklahoma. I get up the next day. I go. I play. It's fine. I make some money. Go back that evening. Lay down in the room. There's, you know, watching videos on my iPad. Get up the next day. I go over there in the afternoon. I play for like 8 or 9 hours. I make a little bit more money. That was good. I had a successful trip. Fine. So the first 3 days were okay. The fourth day, there's almost nobody in the poker room. And I remember the reason I went down there is I was promised, oh, there are so many people there. There are so many tables.
Yeah.
There's so much action. You're just going to love it. It's going to be crazy. You may not even be able to get a seat. That's how busy it's going to be. There are 6 tables of games, none of which I want to play. So I sit down in a game I don't want to play anyway because there's nothing else to do. Here's the problem in Durant, Oklahoma. When you're in Durant, Oklahoma, and you walk outside, everywhere you look, it's Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Except for a Dollar General next door.
That's all.
Yeah.
You can go to the Choctaw Nation tobacco shop if you like.
Well.
Or you can go up the street to the Quick Trip. That's about it. Those are your choices. So I played in this lousy game for about 90 minutes, lost a little bit of money. Fine, I'm done. I went back. I spent almost all of Tuesday just hanging out in the hotel room. They didn't even have a decent pool at the motel I was staying. And so I'm just basically hanging out, doing some writing, some other things. Fine. That night, I'm getting hungry. Dinner time. I see there's a place nearby, down the street, called the Rib Crib. Hey, I like ribs. It's Midwestern. Maybe they make ribs as well as we do here in St. Louis. Mm. I go in, and they have 2 kinds of ribs. St. Louis ribs and baby back ribs. I like them both.
Yeah.
And better yet, Tuesday night at the Rib Crib, all-you-can-eat ribs.
Whoa.
Well, I'm a big old fat guy. This is perfect for me. So I sit down, and the waitress says, what do you want? I said, I want all the ribs I can eat. She said, yeah, I figured that. She actually said that to me. I figured that. I don't know if that was a comment about me or just everybody who was there on a Tuesday evening, and it was pretty crowded. She said, would you like the St. Louis ribs or the baby back? I said, you know what? I'm from St. Louis. For a change, I'll have the baby back ribs. Okay, what two sides would you like with that? And I chose beans and I don't know what else.
Slaw?
No, maybe I got mac and cheese. Oh, I wasn't going to eat the sides. It didn't matter.
Yeah.
I'm just there to have ribs. So she brings out the first thing, and I had just had a glass of water. I said, you know what? Could you bring me a Coke, too? Well, by the time she gets back from the Coke, not kidding, it's 90 seconds, I have finished the amount of ribs that they bring you. Now, anybody who knows anything about all you can eat, where they have to bring it to you as opposed to a buffet, they don't bring you a lot of food.
No.
They bring you a little bit of food as often as you want.
Like three ribs.
And, well, I think the first one may have been four.
Oh.
Okay. But you're right. After that, each subsequent one was exactly right, Dan, three ribs.
Oh.
So every time she comes back, she says, should I put another order in? Yes, you should. Yes, you should.
Why don't you put two orders in?
At one point, I have finished the three ribs in front of me because they're delicious and they're going down so easily that now it's a while. She hasn't been back to my table for a while. And I'm thinking, okay, maybe this is the strategy. Give the fat guy three plates of ribs. He'll leave. He'll eat his sides and go home. I'm not done. I want a fourth plate. And now she's not there, and so I'm looking over at the sides. So I'm going, well, maybe I'll have some of these. So, sure enough, I eat half of the baked beans and half of the mac and cheese, I think it was. And then she comes back with the next one, and I scarf that down. And then I start having that feeling.
Uh-oh.
You know the feeling you have when your body realizes that you really should have stopped a little while ago?
There's meat sweats?
No, it wasn't quite the meat sweats.
Like there's not enough room left?
Yes. Yeah.
And something has to give? Something like that?
It wasn't that bad immediately, but it was just that feeling in your stomach where that part of your body wanted to transmit to the head part of your body that was consuming all of this food, we are full down here!
No, you've had enough.
No more! No more! So after the fourth plate of ribs, so that's four ribs plus three ribs plus three ribs plus three ribs, that's not actually that many ribs. That's like a
maybe
full...
Maybe a rack.
That's
yeah,
a little
rack.
Bit, maybe a little bit more than the full rack. Okay. I'm done, and I still haven't eaten the sides. I asked for the check, and I walk back to the motel, and it was hot. It was 8 o'clock at night, but just like here, it was stinking hot and humid. And by the time I get back, I am sweating. And I'm starting to think, is this the humidity and the heat, or is this the meat that is steaming me from the inside?
Yes. Oh.
And I go upstairs, and I lie down on my bed. And I have that feeling everybody who's ever overeaten knows. You know that night you came home and you were mad about something and you decided to eat all the Oreos in the box?
Yeah.
Sure.
Or you stopped off at Steak and Shake and you decided, I'm going to have two double steak burgers and a large shake. And then you go home and you lie down and you go, oh.
Why did I do that?
I shouldn't have done that. Oh, man. I do not fall asleep that night until 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh.
Because I roll over. No, that's not comfortable. I roll over this way. Nope, that's not comfortable. I get up. I'm going to the bathroom. Nothing. You know, all of that stuff. I'm not going to get into the details of it. But it's just that,
You don't have any Tums or anything with you?
I have nothing.
Oh.
And I'm not sure if it was a matter of Tums, you know, which is really gas, right?
Yeah. I guess. Indigestion, maybe?
This was just my body was not used to having this much pork forced into it in a short period. I don't think I was in the rib crib more than 20 minutes. That's how quickly I was eating this stuff.
Oh, man. That's fast.
And so it's all congealed, I'm sure, at one point in my digestive system and not quick to move through. And here's my warning for you kids listening in. Don't do that.
No.
You
can say that, though, but I'm sure you've done that multiple times.
Of course I have.
Maybe probably 20 times in your life.
20? I'll take the over.
I'm never doing this again.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Yeah.
So I finally get to sleep. And in the morning, I've got to get up a little early because I'm leaving, but I had made plans to drive back to Dallas and go to the 6th-floor museum. At Dealey Plaza. You know what that is?
Oh, no. Is that where The Lee sixth Harvey floor, Oswald is that where was, the... Is that where he
camped
actually...
out?
That's exactly
oh,
right.
Wow.
That's where Lee Harvey Oswald was when he shot President Kennedy in the motorcade in November 22nd, 1963. As they drove through Dealey Plaza.
Yeah.
And you go there, and there's this whole museum that they've put in what used to be the Texas School Book Depository. That's what it was when Oswald worked there and did his thing. And it's really, really well done. You walk in, you pay whatever it is. I actually bought my ticket online ahead of time so I could skip through the line. And they give you headphones and a little audio thing that you go through all the exhibits and it plays. And you actually hear the voices of some of the people who were there. And it tells the whole story. And there are panels with details on, you know, JFK's history beforehand, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then they get into the actual assassination and you see what they call the sniper's nest, which is the corner of that sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository, where Oswald had set himself up behind a bunch of boxes with his sniper rifle and his Marine sniper skills that he had used from there. And you can see, you can't walk over to that corner, it's glassed off, but you can look in and see where it is, and then you can stand right next to it and look out the windows adjacent to it and look down and essentially have the same view that he had, except that it's 50-plus years later and the trees are taller.
Yeah.
Et cetera. So I looked down there, and I noticed that on the street down there, which is Elm Street, that's where the assassination took place, there's a white X in the middle lane of the three lanes on Elm Street.
And that's it? That's where the spot was?
Well, I looked around, and I found an exhibit, and there's actually, before that, I hadn't noticed, before that, there's a blue X also in the middle lane of those three. The X is where the first shot hit Kennedy's car, and the white X is where the fatal shot hit Kennedy and blew the top of his head off.
Wow.
And you stand there and you look at it from that perspective and you think to yourself, first of all, this is a lot closer than I thought it was. Because all I've ever seen is the Zapruder film. I've never seen it from that sixth floor perspective.
Yeah.
And it's the street right below you. And, you know, people talk about, well, he must have been an amazing shot. Yeah, he was an amazing shot, but he was a Marine who had been taught to be a sharpshooter. And then you see how close it is, and you realize how unbelievably unprepared the Secret Service was that day. I mean, today, if whoever the president is traveling anywhere, they take over every building. Nobody's allowed in the windows. Nobody's allowed on the roofs. They're all out there. But on that day, here's just a random building where who knows how many other buildings they passed where the same access would have been available. It was a remarkable thing to do. And then I left the museum and I went downstairs and I walked through there and I could see the grassy knoll and, you know, the wooden fence that's part of the story. Oh, by the way, in the sixth floor museum, they also have several exhibits about the conspiracy theories. About how people believed this and how people believed that, and one right after the other. And after you read through about eight or nine of these, you realize there are still people here 54 years later, who are completely obsessed with the conspiracy part of this and don't buy the Lee Harvey Oswald part of it at all. And the museum kind of debunks a couple of those conspiracy theories, but they leave some stuff hanging. They don't make it 100% clear that it was Oswald, acting by himself, who killed the president. And they talk about the Warren Commission and all that sort of stuff. It's a fascinating, fascinating place to visit. If you're ever in Dallas, take a couple of hours and go there. It's amazing. Now, I come out of the 6th Floor Museum, and I walk back to my rental car because I got to get to Love Field, get on my Southwest flight to get home. And I get back in there, and I don't know how to get to Love Field, but I have my iPhone with me, and it has Google Maps on it. So I Google Map Love Field, find it, start the directions, and I prop the phone up on the dashboard like I always do, right where the speedometer and odometer and the other stuff are. I prop it up right there, and I pull out of the lot, and I do what it says, make a right here. I go down Elm Street right over those X's that I was talking about through the triple overpass, and I go through that thing, and I make another right turn, and the screen on my iPhone goes black. And I thought, okay, well, I'll just hit the button, and it'll come back on. And I hit the button, and I expect the full display to come back on, and instead it says the iPhone is too hot to operate.
Too hot?
We have to wait until the iPhone cools down before it will work anymore. So now I'm in Dallas. I don't know where I am or where I'm going. I've just essentially gotten there. That was the way I got to the sixth floor museum. This is how I'm going to get to the airport. I don't know where I'm going.
Did you hold it up to the vent?
That's exactly what I did, Dan. Very smart.
Yeah.
But I didn't even know that the iPhone had a thermometer in it.
I didn't either.
Did you have an Android phone?
I think they both do that. If it gets too hot, it will shut down.
Wow.
As a
have you ever had that happen
precaution.
To you?
No.
Neither had I.
I've never had mine do that.
No. So I'm holding my iPhone up to the vent, and now I start thinking, and I pull off to the side of the road.
Right.
Because I don't know where to go. So I'm holding it up to the vent, and it's cooling down. And then I think to myself, my iPad's in the trunk.
Oh.
And it's been in the trunk this entire time. If my iPhone reacted like that from being in the car with me for less than 5 minutes and leaning up against the dashboard, what is going on with the electronics in the trunk right now? I better not look because I'll get really upset. I better not. But I was hoping that I could watch something on the plane on mm-hmm. the way back. So when I get to the airport, I take it out, and it is hot to the touch. Oh, that's not going to be good. But I turned it on, and it worked, and everything was fine. And I'm thrilled at that. And I turned the iPhone on, and I'm looking through some news stories, and one of the first news stories I see is from Oklahoma that day, from Moore, Oklahoma, the story of a woman named Melissa Sechrest, who had gotten burned, third-degree burns, from pennies she had accidentally dropped on the driver's seat of her car in the 100-degree heat. When she got out, the change fell out of her pocket, and when she came back, the pennies were so hot, and she was wearing shorts, that they burned the flesh on the back of her legs.
Holy cow.
Because they were inside the car, and it was just like it was here, 100 degrees outside.
Wow.
Mm.
Unbelievable. And that, kids, is why I went to a casino. No.
Oh, and you missed it. You were telling us the story about how cold it was in the casino.
Or in the poker room. Yeah, it's always cold in poker rooms, which on a 100-degree day, you want to be in a place where the air conditioning works.
Right.
But in most poker rooms, it's colder than it needs to be. And so I actually, when I go play poker, I always take a sweatshirt with me. Even on days like today, I would take a sweatshirt with me to wear in the poker room.
Like we do here in the studio.
Because the studio is colder than it needs to be.
Yeah.
But it's at least 5 degrees colder in most poker rooms. Well, mm-hmm. the one in Oklahoma, it was the cash games were in a big ballroom. And there weren't that many of us to generate enough body heat to counteract the freezing air conditioning that they had. And so I was wearing my sweatshirt, and I was freezing. But there were guys who were at the table with me who were in a T-shirt or a short sleeve shirt and shorts, who are holding themselves like bear hugging themselves and shivering. And one of the guys says, "That's it. Where's the gift shop in this place? They must sell Choctaw Casino sweatshirts. I'm going to go find one of them." And somebody says, "Just go out here down the escalator, and it's right downstairs." And comes back 5 minutes later and says, "They don't have any warm weather stuff out there. It's the middle of summer. They don't sell sweatshirts when it's 100 degrees outside." And the woman even told me, even if they did, they only have them in women's style.
Oh.
I would have worn one of those. That's how cold I am in here.
Man.
Yeah. Good news is, iPhone still works in a poker room.
Beautiful.
Not quite as bad as being out in that Midwestern heat. All right, we'll take a break here. Colin's going to be along in about a half hour to join me, and we'll do the showbiz stuff today, which includes him reviewing a movie called Lights Out. It's a horror movie where I believe the monster only comes out when the lights are out.
Yeah, they can see. I've seen the trailers for that. When you turn the lights out, it's a ghost or something.
Well, I want to ask him about this because if I'm the guy in charge, I name the movie Get a Nightlight.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's just me.
I just keep the lights on.
And then I also went to see the new Star Trek movie. So I'll have my review of that. And later on, the Harris Challenge, Knuckleheads in the News, and lots more. All here on the Big 550 KTRS. Hard to find a better voice in history than Al Green.
I'm so in love with you.
Welcome back to the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon here on the Big 550 KTRS. Speaking of voices, Brian Wilson didn't have much of one last night at the Family Arena. The guy from the Beach Boys who's still around, still doing stuff, and did the entire Pet Sounds album, which was the one that made him considered a genius, and that word is still thrown around. In fact, earlier I heard Kent Earhart and Tom O'Keefe talking about him and using the word genius repeatedly. And I do have to ask this question. How long do you have to have a period of not coming up with great new stuff before people go, maybe genius applied at the time, but after a while it wears off?
Yeah, he was a good songwriter.
In the 60s.
Time. Yeah, in the 60s.
He had maybe about 8 years of really great
but
stuff.
Since then, when the drugs and everything else kicked in and all this other stuff, not so much a genius.
Yeah.
Doing all that stuff. I agree.
Yeah, I don't know what the...
Yeah, I'm sure we could still consider Albert Einstein a genius. Yeah. Mostly his death has kept him from coming up with new
something
revolutionary
new
theories.
Yeah.
But I mean, look at, I'll give you another example from the music world. Paul McCartney, mm-hmm. who's going to be at Busch Stadium in just a couple of weeks. One of the greatest songwriters of all time, right?
Yeah.
Sure.
Genius? Tell me something genius Paul McCartney's done since 1980, since the Back to the Egg album, which wasn't even that great. He had all those great years with the Beatles. No problem. I'm a huge Beatles fan. Love their stuff. He had a bunch of good years with Wings and solo stuff of his own, and I liked a lot of that, too. Name me something he's done since 1980. I would even apply the same thing to Mick Jagger and Keith Richards of the Rolling Stones. Last good thing they did was write Start Me Up on the Tattoo You album in 1982.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how long do you keep that genius title before people come along? And by the way, I think if you have that applied to you, you hate it. Because when you have that long period of nothing, people go,
what
genius,
happened?
Huh?
Yeah.
Hey, come on, genius.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the new album? Where's the new theory of relativity, genius?
I broke up with my girlfriend. Write a song about that. Come on.
You know what she said when she left? You're no genius.
Yeah.
So, I'm just asking. I don't have the answer. I'm just asking.
Yeah,
I forgot to mention that later on when we do the knuckleheads in the news, it's an all Pokemon Go knuckleheads.
All right.
I mentioned last week when I had one story in there that we were going to get a lot of them, and people sent me a whole bunch of them. So that'll be in 2 hours, 2 hours from right now, an all Pokemon Go knuckleheads in the news.
There was a kid earlier in the week that fell behind this ravine at Oakville High School out in South County.
Mm.
First of all, my daughter went to Oakville and graduated from Oakville High School. We never knew that there was a big ravine behind Oakville High School. But this kid fell down, and they had it on the news, and they were talking about how they had to go down and rescue him and bring him up and all this other. And the person that was reporting on it made sure to say he was not playing Pokemon Go.
Okay.
Just a random fall in a ravine.
Yeah, just a teenager. Being a teenager.
I think we need to know why he fell in the ravine.
Yeah.
Oh. What else do I want to talk about today? Why would you want to be a delegate to a national political convention? I don't care if you're a Republican or a Democrat. Why would you want to go to 4 days of that crap?
I don't know.
You sit there and you listen to speeches. And by the way, I'm saying this as a guy who in high school was kind of nerdy. I went to the freaking Model UN.
You did?
Yes, because I was in the debate club in high school. I outgrew that as an adult. And, you know, when people go to conventions, whenever I hear somebody going to a convention somewhere, they always seem like they're really happy and they're going to party. And that's the whole reason for going there. Their company is paying for their trip. And, you know, I got this big insurance thing I got to go to in San Diego. I don't want to go to San Diego, but the boss is making me go for 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
Boo freaking who. And they go to the convention, and, you know, it's drinking and hookers, basically. That's most conventions. And I'm sure that was the case in Cleveland this week and will be next week in Philadelphia, because politicians and those people are no different than the rest of us when it comes to that. But I don't understand why you'd want to go there. I understand that there's a certain point in the early days of the convention, the political convention, where you have to work on the party's platform.
Yeah.
Which no one cares about outside that building.
No. No. And there are some people, they were talking about some people that they've talked to, that they live for these conventions to come up, and they love going to these conventions.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't see it.
These are the people who enjoy wearing straw hats.
Yeah. I don't get it.
Where else do you see straw hats except on that and a barbershop quartet? That's it. It's the only time somebody's wearing a straw hat.
But I am not political at all. And I know Peon's not either. And,
no. And no, I kind of look at those people kind of strangely.
I do too.
Just what else is going on in your life that this is the most important thing to do
yes,
right now?
Yes, and they are so enthusiastic about it.
Oh, my goodness.
They can't wait to be there to hear all those speeches. You know, if I want to see those speeches, we get C-SPAN in my house. If I really wanted to see those speeches, which I don't.
And stand up about 10 times during the speech. Yeah, yeah. And then go, USA,
yeah.
USA.
And that goofy whatever rigmarole they had them do where each state had to come up and actually officially give.
Oh, the roll call.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that was different where they were taking votes on stuff, just yay and nay. But then they would officially come up.
Yeah, that's called the roll call where they go, and now the great state of Missouri, home of, you know, whatever it was that they would do. And sometimes they go on for like 30 seconds.
Oh, my goodness.
But here's the thing. That goes back to the days before we had, what's the word I'm looking for here? Computers.
Yeah.
Or radio.
Right.
Or television.
I thought this has all been decided already. I mean, I guess.
Isn't the Electoral College?
It's just
college
for show, I guess.
It's like when they were to refer to Trump or Hillary as the presumptive candidate. No, not presumptive. We know what the vote was. They're going to go to the convention. All they're going to do at the convention is go, yeah, everybody agree with that? Yeah. Okay, let's get hot dogs.
Yeah.
Woohoo. And I heard someone say the other day that it was the Electoral College was originally put together because, and it may have been Scott Sherman, originally put together because they would horseback ride throughout the country to tell everybody what was going on.
Yeah, we didn't have phones.
Yeah, we didn't have phones. We didn't have anything.
We didn't have the internet. We didn't have any of that stuff. So, of course, in those days, the Electoral College was invented by the people who founded our nation, who were amongst the smartest people in the land, and certainly the elitists.
Yeah.
You know, they were all wealthy people, and they wanted to be the ones who were in charge of that. We can't leave this to the people to decide. And even if we do, we have to have representatives from each state Pony Express their way across the country. How else would you know what the vote was in Missouri or Wyoming or Nebraska or Texas or California if you're in Philadelphia or Washington?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you have no other way to know.
Well, Mike Bush was around back then. He could have said something.
So it's the platform thing that seems like the biggest waste of time.
Yeah.
Because no candidate has to sign it or pledge to follow the platform. They just run on whatever they stand for.
Well, then at the end of the night, doesn't the guy come out and say, yay or nay, should we end this night of the convention? And they all go, yay!
Yay.
And then he hits the gavel. Like, what am I watching?
I know! It is so bizarre. But if you ask any of those people, they will tell you it is integral to our democracy, and without them, we could not have the nation that we do. Yes, we could!
Tonight's theme is keeping America beautiful. And then everybody comes out and they don't say anything about keeping America beautiful.
No, they don't.
They slam other people. And,
I know. Ian found this story I have to share with you today about a woman who has been a victim of the IRS con that's going around now. If you have not gotten this phone call, and I got it a couple of weeks ago, The guy pretending to be from the IRS, you owe the government money. Click.
Did you really?
Yeah, I just hung up immediately. It was one of those days where I made the mistake of answering a phone number that was not in my contacts list. So it just came up a phone number, and I didn't think to myself, don't answer it like I always do. And I answered it, and I click. It didn't go 6 seconds. But this woman in Portland, Maine? Is this Portland, Maine or Portland, Oregon? Doesn't matter, Paul. Get on with the story. All right, I will. Calm down. This woman got a call on Wednesday from people purporting to be the IRS demanding that she pay them in iTunes gift cards. And they would not let her get off the phone, so she spent hours getting money out of her bank, banks, plural, and then going and purchasing the gift cards, which you can get at most supermarkets. And they wouldn't let her get off the phone. They repeatedly threatened her. So somebody saw this woman sitting in a parking lot outside of a store. Her door was open, and she had hundreds of iTunes gift cards to the tune of $8,700 worth of iTunes gift cards,
which
are usually, what, 15, 20, 25 bucks?
I don't know how big.
You can get all kinds of denominations.
So she's sitting there, and somebody sees her there, and they call the cops thinking that this woman is selling phony cards thinking that she's doing something, not that she's the victim. So the cops come, and it turns out that she is a victim. And one of the cops said, well, it could have been much worse. Thankfully, somebody in the community called us because these people were being vicious to her, threatening her that if she did not pay up. And by the way, she had already gotten the iTunes gift cards and was on the phone with them reading the code number on the back so they could use it. And they would tell her, that's not enough. We need more. We need more. You haven't paid off your full amount yet. $8,700 this woman got ripped off of. The IRS, of course, says, look, we are never going to contact you that way. We're not going to demand immediate payment. We will always send you a letter first. We're not going to call you out of the blue, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But that's the worst one I've read lately.
That's horrible.
And who, by the way, falls for that? Do you think the I in IRS stands for iTunes?
Yeah. I think somebody that is very naive.
Yes.
And then maybe they do owe the IRS some money. Or they're not sure, and they are scared to death. They've heard stories about the IRS.
Yes. When I first heard this story, I thought, oh, this poor old woman.
Mm-hmm.
Then I looked at the story. She's 24. 24 years old.
That falls into the naive category.
Yes, very naive. Especially if you get a call from someone saying you're from the IRS.
I'm with the government.
Yeah,
and we're going to need your money.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine you don't have anybody else in your life that you would turn and ask about, but
can I get a phone number?
You don't know.
But if they say, "Do not hang up the phone,"
yeah, do not hang up the phone. Go buy more iTunes cards.
I'm sorry. Click.
And by the way,
hello, testing 1, 2. Hello.
You want some Buffalo Wild Wings cards too?
All right, showbiz stuff coming up next hour. Welcome back to the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon here on the Big 550 KTRS. This portion of the show brought to you by Window World, the number one replacement window company in the United States, the original $189 window company, online at windowworldst.louis.com. I am Paul Harris, Dan Strauss. Guys are here with me, and now news director Colin Jeffrey switches to his alter ego as Showbiz Boy to talk about showbiz stuff from this week, including 4 movies we have to review, and that's not even all the movies that are coming out this weekend.
Nope.
So I will let you start off with the horror movie Lights Out.
Okay, Lights Out comes out this week. It's based off of a YouTube video that's 2.5 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
And watch the YouTube video, sure. Why not? It's good.
Okay.
It's legitimately scary. I just showed it to Josh, and he jumped multiple times in 2.5 minutes.
Okay.
A very neat little sort of feature here is that in the YouTube video, there's a woman flipping a light switch. And if you've seen the preview for this, you've seen a woman flipping a light switch. It's the same woman. So pretty cool. She started out on YouTube, and now she's in a major motion picture.
Okay, well, here's my question. If it's good as a 2.5-minute YouTube video, did we need to spend 100 minutes making it into a movie?
Well, we spent 80, so
okay.
Go them. 80 minutes, perfect length for this. You may ask, why is a horror movie coming out during the summer and not Halloween? Because it's not a fully fleshed out horror movie. It has one gimmick, and that is simultaneously its greatest strength and its sort of biggest flaw. What does this center around? It centers around a young family, a mother with her child, and then her second child is off on her own in a rebellious, 20-something. So what happens is during the opening scene, we see a man married to this woman, and he's closing up his shop for the day. And every time the lights go out, there's some being there. And when the lights are on, the being can't be in the light. So that's the main gimmick here. There's this being that can just exist in the dark.
Okay.
And that's the gimmick for the entire movie.
Let me just ask you this. At any time in the movie, did somebody say, let's get a nightlight?
They're smart enough. Yeah. Yes.
Let's just make sure there's a light on all the time and really would handle this problem.
Yes. Yeah. And they deal with that effectively enough that I'm not thrown off by the fact that even though they had lights on, they're not always on, if that makes sense. Again, I can't really talk too much about it because it's one gimmick. And so if I tell you how it works this one time, it'll sort of it'll take the excitement.
Let me just ask you this. After they decide, you know what, we should have a nightlight, does somebody turn the nightlight off?
No.
Where's the problem?
Do they get the electric bill?
Glow stick pants.
Once they get the electric bill and it's astronomical.
Hold on just a second, Dan. Excuse me for interrupting you.
What?
Glow stick pants?
Sure.
What are those?
I don't know. Pants made out of glow stick material?
Oh, my.
It's always light.
I'm sorry. I apologize for interrupting. I thought Ian had an actual product that he was talking about. Mm-hmm. No, he has a million-dollar idea.
Ian,
just for this guy. I don't know where else you would use glow stick pants, but I guess there could be other applications.
Halloween. Caves.
I would say for like 5 seconds, Peon became me. So
do you have to shake them up, the glow stick pants? Do you have to like
of course you do.
Crack them and jump around?
You crack them right at the knee.
Yeah.
Is somebody writing this down? This is a million-dollar idea.
Yes.
You bend down like in a catcher's position.
Yeah.
And then
and there you go.
And then they glow.
You've solved it.
Jenkins, turn your pants down, man. That's way too bright. The cops are going to see us.
Jenkins
is always in trouble.
Oh, he's always
okay,
crazy.
Back to whatever you were talking about, Dan.
The lights.
Crap, I don't know. Oh, I
was talking about the utility bill.
Yeah, the utility bill.
Utility bill.
Yes.
Game. It works nicely
because it has that one scare, and so they're able to refine it, if that makes sense. Like, they have to find different ways to present this to you, and they do a pretty good job. And another thing that I like about it is you're not constantly in these new environments. You're in the same, so you have an idea of the layout of a house. It helps with the scare when you've got an idea, oh, this should be here. And if you're in a constantly new environment, you lose that.
Okay. It's kind of like those Paranormal Activity movies.
Yeah.
So,
once they show you the layout of the house, you're like, wait, something's off here. I can sort of tell. And you can start to feel that.
Is there anybody in this movie we would know?
No. That's not true. I guess you would probably know Maria Bello. She plays the mom.
I like her a lot.
So that's who you'd know.
Okay.
I think you will like Teresa Palmer after you watch this movie as the young woman in this, trying to escape the lights out demon or beast or the lights out creature. My biggest problem with it, though, is the fact that it is just one scare. This is a jump scare. The entire movie is a jump scare. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna take you behind this. A jump scare has been called a magic trick because it uses the same three parts as a magic trick. The pledge: you hear a noise, that is something scary, and the character will go to investigate it. Then you get the turn. They go there and they see, oh, it was just a branch against the tree or against the side of the window or whatever. And then the prestige is the monster appears, and there you go. That is a jump scare. Those are the three parts of a jump scare.
Okay.
And then you've got all sorts of other things.
What was the first part of it?
The pledge.
Okay. You reminded me of a bit Eddie Murphy used to do in his stand-up act a long, long time ago about how the horror movies would be so different if black people were in them. And he used the Amityville Horror as the example. He said, you know, in that movie, this white family or white bunch of kids, no, I think it's a family, they move into this house and they hear a voice saying, get out. And they go to investigate. Mm-hmm. He said, you put a black family in there? Man, we really love this place. This is beautiful. I think we can spend the rest of our life here. Get out. Sorry, we're moving. We're out of here.
Yes.
He said, you would see a me-sized hole in the wall.
Exactly.
Get out. We're gone.
Okay.
We're out of here. That's it.
Who am I to question you?
Yeah. And so that limits it. There's not a whole lot you can do when every scare is going to be set up essentially the same way. But they do it really well. And on top of that, again, I recommend go see comedies, go see big blockbusters, and go see horror movies in theaters. It adds to the fun because there was lots of laughter, and that is a biological response to being scared when you know nothing can happen to you. You laugh, and there was plenty of laughter. Additionally, there were a few things that were legitimately funny in this movie. I enjoyed this movie. I had very low expectations. When I hear, based off the YouTube video...
Yeah, what do you expect from that?
But wow, and... go this guy.
Okay.
Creating a YouTube video and getting someone to agree to go. Go see this. Have fun. It is a summer horror movie.
It's called Lights Out.
Lights Out.
What do you give it on a scale of 10?
I give it a 7 out of 10. It's
okay.
A lot of fun.
All right.
For what it is.
Okay. Big movie blockbuster that's opening this weekend is Star Trek Beyond.
Mm-hmm.
Am I correct in saying that's going to dominate the box office
this
weekend?
Yeah, it should. It's, yeah.
This is the 141st Star Trek movie-ish. I don't know how many there have been.
Beyond numbers.
It was co-written by Simon Pegg, who is back playing the character of Scotty. And I went to see this last night, not at a press screening, but in a regular movie theater, and there weren't that many people there, which surprised me because it was the first showing of a Star Trek movie. I assumed that at least the Trekkies would be out, but they weren't. And the movie opens up with Simon Pegg. Before the movie even starts, you see Simon Pegg come on screen and essentially saying, "Hi, I'm here on the set of Star Trek Beyond, and I just wanted to take a moment to thank you for coming out to the movie, because when we make a movie like this, we make it so that you can see it on a really big screen," and he's motioning to the, you know, the size of the screen. "And so I just want you to know we really appreciate the fact that you're paying your good money to come and see a movie like this, on a screen like this, and we hope that you'll continue to do that." I think this is part of a campaign to have the people who make these movies thank you like that, to, instead of saying, "Well, I'll just wait for it to come on Netflix. I'll watch it on Amazon Prime. I'll watch it when it comes on HBO," whatever it is, to get you to go to the box office. It was very odd, because then we roll right into the movie, and it's just another Star Trek movie. And I mean that as just another Star Trek movie. It's got Kirk. It's got Spock. It's got McCoy. It's got Uhuru. It's got Sulu. It's got Chekhov. It's got the same kind of stuff you've seen in every other, and I mean every other Star Trek movie. It has a villain who's played by Idris Elba, who I'm going to talk about in a second. He plays Krall, this alien who lures the Enterprise into a trap. The Enterprise crashes on this planet. Krall kidnaps the crew, which doesn't really matter, because if you've ever seen a Star Trek episode or a Star Trek spinoff or a Star Trek movie, you know the crew is completely irrelevant. It's those six people, those six characters I just mentioned. There's actually an entire Star Trek movie, Star Trek IV, where it's just those six characters, and they fly an alien vessel with no crew whatsoever, and nobody else has to do anything ever. So the fact that Kirk's crew is taken from him, he should just go, "Well, that's going to be a load off the payroll. We can fly this thing without those people, 800 of them or whatever it is." But, of course, they have to go and they have to rescue them, and they go to this planet, and they've crash-landed there. And
you sound disappointed he didn't let his friends die. Like, it's like, oh, he's got to go rescue them.
I just think making a Star Trek movie central plot having to do with Kirk rescues
saving
the
red
crew
shirts,
the red shirts, they're expendable. On this planet, they meet an alien named Jayla, who's played by an actress named Sophia Boutella, who played the scissor-legged woman in Kingsman on Her Majesty's Secret Service. If you saw that movie, you know what that means.
Yes.
She works with them. They have to work out a plot where they all fight back against Krall, who has some device that does something. What Alfred Hitchcock used to call the MacGuffin. It doesn't actually matter what that thing is or what that thing does. It's that he has it, and they have to get it back for some reason. Otherwise, something really, really bad is going to happen. And I tried to pay really close attention, because I didn't go with my wife. I didn't go with any friends. I'm there by myself. There's only 9 of us in the theater. I'm really paying attention to this movie, and I'm trying to figure out, what is the plot of this movie? Why is that thing so important? Okay, they've escaped from him, and now they have to get it back for, I don't know. I can't tell you. Put a gun to my head, I could not tell you what that is. But as Hitchcock used to say, that doesn't matter. I will tell you, the effects in this thing are, of course, good CGI. Sometimes they're a bit much. There are also a few scenes in here that, especially with the 3D glasses on, are way too dark for you to really see what's going on. Also, and this is a complaint I've made about the two previous Star Trek movies that J.J. Abrams has done. He didn't direct this one. Again, a guy named Julian Lin did.
Justin
Lin, I'm sorry.
Fast and Furious.
Who did the Fast and Furious movies. We're always doomed to a future where the hero and the villain have to fight in hand-to-hand combat, usually atop a very tall structure overseeing some giant city or someplace like that. It always has to come down to that. So even in the 23rd century, we're still going to be having fist fights, apparently. There's also a ridiculous scene in here. Speaking of the MacGuffin, there's a scene in this movie where they're being led by this alien woman, Jayla, who they've befriended, through some complex of something, and Kirk goes, wow, is that what I think it is? And the camera pans over, and it's a really old motorcycle. Now, anybody who's ever seen an action movie knows that when the hero says, is that what I think it is? And they pan over to a motorcycle, within 15 minutes on screen, the hero is going to be riding that old motorcycle in a really exciting action sequence.
Yes.
And, of course, that's what happens here on this alien world where he doesn't know where he's going and he's on a terrain that's completely uneven. But it doesn't matter because he found the really old motorcycle. He must use the really old motorcycle.
That was filled with gas.
That was filled with gas and didn't have any other problems. I will say that there is a very, very, very nice tribute to Leonard Nimoy in this movie with the guy who plays Spock now, whose name escapes me.
Yes, and it escapes me, too. He was a bad guy on Heroes in the first season.
Something with a Q, right?
Zachary Quinto.
Yeah, the guy who plays Nimoy, who plays Spock, has a scene where he sees a picture or something of Nimoy, and there's a very nice tribute, and the movie is dedicated to him. There's also a thing at the end where they dedicate it to the guy who plays Chekhov, who died a couple of months ago in a car accident when I think his car ran him over. Wasn't that the story?
Rolled over on him or something.
Anton Yelchin. There's also a very weird shot. Spoiler alert. I'm going to tell you about a spoiler alert right now. Mm-mm. Just a warning. There's a scene towards the end of the movie where Zachary Quinto, as Spock, looks inside of something that he's been handed down from someone. He looks inside it, and it's a picture. Now, maybe you can explain this to me. It's a picture of the original Star Trek cast members who are dressed up for one of the movies. I think it's either 4 or 5, or maybe it was 6. But they're dressed up like that. But it's the original actors. It's Shatner. It's Nimoy. It's DeForest Kelly. It's James Doohan. It's Nichelle Nichols. It's Walter Koenig. And it's George Takei.
Yes.
They're all there, and they're dressed in their uniform. And so he's looking at a picture of them, and you can see he's thinking to himself, oh, that's so sad that we've lost, and the camera zooms in on Leonard Nimoy, which is the second little tribute they have to him in the movie. Now, here's my question. He is Spock.
Yes.
And the people he's with are Kirk and McCoy, and they're being played by all of these actors. So who are these people he's looking at a picture of?
Well, that is in the first, in the reboot, the J.J. Abrams.
Yeah.
That has to do with time travel, and Leonard Nimoy is actually in it.
I know, and he's Ambassador Spock.
And so I think that's what it's acknowledging that there was another timeline, and he may be the only one that knows
about it
or some garbage.
It's completely out of place in this movie. It didn't need to be there. I know they wanted to do a thing for Leonard Nimoy, who just died last year. I get that. He was important. He was probably the most popular character on Star Trek, Spock. But they overdid it with that part. I'll also tell you that there is a pretty good soundtrack in here with a prominent display of the Public Enemy song Fight the Power and the Beastie Boys song Sabotage, which, of course, has to be played while somebody is sabotaging something, because we can't be subtle in a Star Trek movie.
Do not get a Fast and Furious director if you want subtlety.
No.
Not their specialty.
This movie is okay. If you're really into Star Trek, you might think it's better than I did. If you're not into Star Trek at all, you're going to think it's worse than I did. I'm giving this thing a 6 out of 10, Star Trek Beyond. It's going to make a lot of money.
Yes.
And they've already talked about how there's going to be a fourth movie with these characters in it. Fine. It's, to me, I was telling Dan this before, to me, Star Trek movies have become like Bond movies. I feel like I have to go see them. And I always walk out and go, why did I go see that? It happens to me every time.
Yep.
And that's how I felt walking out of the movie last night. Now, about Idris Elba, who plays the villain in this, Crawl, this guy's having a hell of a 2-year run.
Mm-hmm.
This is what he's done in the last 2 years. He did the voice work for Finding Dory, the voice work for The Jungle Book, where he plays the villain, the tiger. He did voice work for Zootopia. He starred in Beasts of No Nation, which he won a Golden Globe for. And he was in The Avengers Age of Ultron. That's just in the last 2 years. And he's done other superhero movies before that as well.
Yep.
He's also going to be making a movie next year called Molly's Game, which I'm looking forward to, because I interviewed the woman who is Molly. Her real-life name is Molly Bloom. She's a woman who used to run the high-stakes celebrity poker games in Los Angeles with Tobey Maguire and Ben Affleck and Rick Solomon and all these people who used to play in those games. She wrote a book about her experiences about that. And how about this? When you write a book like that and then it gets optioned and you find out The screenplay is going to be written by, and the director is going to
be Aaron Sorkin. Yep.
Absolutely. How's that for just ringing the giant bell? Jessica Chastain is going to play her in the movie, and Idris Elba is in there as well. So, again, 6 out of 10 for Star Trek Beyond. It's not great, but it's okay. You know?
No.
It's a big screen special effects movie. And
it's a very crowded weekend for it to come out. That seems like bad planning.
Maybe the other studios looked at it and went, well, that's not going to be such a big deal, so we can come out with our movies at the same time.
Yeah.
We have two other movies to get to. Let's take a break for traffic and some commercials, and then we'll come back and we'll do that. We have Captain Fantastic, which stars Viggo Mortensen. And what's the other one that you have? Oh, Ice Age Collision Course.
Yeah.
Which will be the big kids movie for the weekend, right?
It'll be, it's coming out this weekend.
Oh, wow. There's a preview of Colin's review right there.
Oh, yeah.
Back in a moment here on the Big 550 KTRS. It's the showbiz segment of our Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon here on the Big 550 KTRS. Paul Harris, Dan Strauss, Ian Geis, and Colin Jeffrey. Colin seemed to enjoy his movie choice thus far more than I did. He gave Lights Out a 7 out of 10. I just gave Star Trek Beyond a 6 out of 10. But there are two other movies opening up this weekend. And the one for the kids is Ice Age Collision Course. What number is this in the Ice Age series?
Number 5.
Okay. Nice. I remember seeing the original one, and it was funny.
The original one was funny. Then they did The Meltdown. Then they did Dawn of the Dinosaurs. Then they did Continental Drift. And now, of course, we're doing Collision Course. So naturally, this would be in space.
Wait a minute.
Yep.
The Woolly Mammoth and the other characters from the Ice Age are in space.
Sort of. The Scrat, the little saber-toothed rat, he's in space because he finds a UFO at the beginning of the movie and then is going on a tour of our solar system and crashes into a rock that is then hurtling towards Earth and is going to wipe out all life, mm-hmm. just like it did with the dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's based on a true story, Dan. Beat you to the punch there. Yeah, it's bad. Sure, there might be a few cute moments in there. Might be one or two things that'll make you laugh.
If you took your daughter, would she agree that this was a bad movie?
I took my daughter.
Yeah?
She watched the whole thing and she's 4. She was, there's talking woolly mammoths and they're dancing and, they're getting into shenanigans. And
okay.
Keep her attention.
That's all she needs.
Yeah, it was 3D, and it did that. It's like, yes, if I were 4, sure.
Okay.
I will watch a 3D movie with talking animals.
What if you're 8, which is really the target market for this movie?
I don't know. There were not. So I just saw with a lot of kids around us The Secret Life of Pets a week or two ago.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of laughter.
Mm-hmm.
This, not so much. Mm. Secret Life of Pets, which I was not a huge fan of, but okay, it's a movie for the kids. There were people applauding at the end of it and parents saying, oh, was that cute? And Dan liked it. Dan gave it an 8 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
And this, there was not a lot of laughter. The parents weren't walking out saying, oh, that was really cute.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a movie. It is a cash grab. If they do another one of these, I will be upset with Dennis Leary. He needs to stop being a part of these.
What does he have to do with it?
He is a voice in it.
He's one of the saber-tooth.
Make them
tigers.
Explain what happened to his character to these little kids. Like, they need to stop. Ray Romano needs to stop. Queen Latifah needs to stop. It is overstayed its welcome.
Scale of 10?
This is a generous 2.
Okay.
Whoa.
This is a very generous 2.
Yeah, wow. Leary, his character looks like the saber tooth on the Flintstones. It kind of is one of their pets.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Before we get to the final movie of this week, I just want to take a moment to do a little tribute to Gary Marshall, one of the people in show business who has just been around forever and done so much. This is a guy who was writing for Jack Parr and Lucille Ball and the Dick Van Dyke Show and Danny Thomas and Joey Bishop in the 60s. And then in the 70s, created Happy Days and all of its spinoffs, and then went on to direct movies like Pretty Woman and Nothing in Common and some other great ones. Recently, we kind of have made fun of Gary Marshall because he's made movies like Mother's Day and Valentine's Day and New Year's Day, and they were all chick flicks. But he did a lot of stuff that had female appeal, and I was very successful at it. And he also had an acting career. He appeared in a few movies. I think the greatest scene he ever did was with Albert Brooks in a movie called Lost in America. Just a couple of weeks ago, I was telling you that Albert Brooks's original movies, the ones he wrote and directed, were finally available for streaming on Netflix, including probably one of two or three movies that are really worth your time, called Lost in America. I'm going to play you a clip from this movie. Yeah, at this point in the movie, Albert Brooks and his wife, played by Julie Haggerty, have gone to Las Vegas to get remarried. They've dropped out of society, but they're going to get remarried in Las Vegas. And in the middle of the night, Julie Haggerty has gone down to the roulette table and lost all of their money, all of their nest egg. And so Albert Brooks goes to the casino manager, played by Gary Marshall, and tries to convince him in a very compelling argument to give them their money back. But they're not getting their money back.
The casino is our main means of income. Not the coffee shop, not the show. The casino, that's what pays all our bills. So if we give everybody their money back, we can't pay our bills. I'm sorry, we can't change our policy.
Okay, play a fun word game with me. This will do it. What do you think of when you think of a hunting lodge?
Hunt.
Yes. What do you think of when you think of a rest home?
Your rest.
So, you see, we're going to associate the Desert Inn with something beautiful. You don't think of anything here now, do you?
Gambling. That's why people come here.
That's
right. They gamble. They want to go to hunting lodges. They go to Wisconsin. They want to rest. They go to New Orleans. They want to gamble. They come to Vegas. That's what it's called, gambling, Las Vegas gambling. You see signs around this town with guys with guns shooting ducks. It's a gambling place. They don't shoot ducks, raccoons, beavers. They come to gamble. That's what we do here. Now, you're a nice guy. You make me laugh and everything. But our policy is we can't give your money back. I'm real sorry. Say goodbye to your wife. I gotta go home.
What about Miracle on 34th Street?
It's a Christmas movie.
Yes, it was. Now, there was Gimbels, who was afraid that if they gave something up that they would lose. And they wound up benefiting. He was afraid that if he gave to Macy's, he would lose his business, and he didn't. It's the same situation. This costs you nothing. To give us our money back is nothing. You would be the one who would benefit.
Wrong. In that movie, Santa Claus took care of everything. It was Macy's, Gimbel's, but Santa Claus came and he fixed the whole thing. We don't have Santa Claus.
Then we get him.
Who?
Santa Claus. We get him. That's the ad campaign. There it goes. I have the chills. We get Santa Claus. He's the one on the billboard. He hands us our nest egg. We associate for the first time ever Christmas and Las Vegas. Las Vegas, a Christmas place to be.
We're finished talking.
Just as delivery on the last line, we're finished talking. And Santa Claus.
Yeah, Santy.
That's Gary Marshall as an actor, and he was tremendous. We're going to have a whole category about him in the Harris Challenge in about a half hour. We lost him this week at age 81. The fourth movie to review week. Colin, I don't know if it was last week or 2 weeks ago, you were talking about movies that have horrible titles.
Yes.
Horrible titles.
Yes.
I have one of those for you today, and it's a shame because it's a very good movie. The movie is called Captain Fantastic. When you hear that, don't you think in the summertime, Captain Fantastic, superhero movie.
Yeah.
Going to be lots of special effects, maybe animated, maybe live action, but that's a superhero movie, Captain Fantastic, or it's a bad Elton John album from 1976.
Yes.
With the sequel, The Brown Dirt Cowboy.
Yep.
No, that's not what it is.
The only two in the room that got that.
I think Tim might have gotten it up in the
Tim did get it.
Captain Fantastic is the story of a father of six children, played by Viggo Mortensen. Six children with whom he lives in the woods in the Pacific Northwest.
He was in Ghostbusters too, wasn't he? Viggo? He was in the painting?
That was not him.
Oh, okay.
It's a different one. But Viggo Mortensen was in a great movie a few years ago. You mentioned Maria Bello is in Lights Out.
History of Violence.
Yes, the two of them are in History of Violence. That's one you can put on your Netflix queue. It's worthwhile. So in this one, Viggo Mortensen and his six children are living in the woods, and he is essentially homeschooling them in every aspect of their life. and they have physical training where they go on runs, they go on hikes, they go rock climbing, they learn how to shoot, they learn how to kill animals for dinner, they learn all of those things. Plus, he has lots of books, and they read, and they know about history and philosophy and all sorts of things. They play music, and they live in the woods, and they have a wonderful life. It's just these seven people. Well, their mother was with them as well, but she got sick at some point, and we find out relatively early on, I'm not spoiling this for you, the mother, who we haven't met yet, dies. And so Viggo Mortensen and the kids, they go into town, a nearby town, on their Partridge Family-like bus, and he calls his wife, now dead wife's parents, and gets the story from them on what happened. And the father, played by Frank Langella, says, yes, we're having the funeral. Don't show up. You are not welcome there. It's obvious that these people, who are probably a little bit more traditional, weren't all that thrilled with their daughter going and living off in the woods with this guy who might have a cult of his own with these six kids that he's raising. They're not really sure. Of course, you can't keep Captain Fantastic down, and so Viggo gets the six kids together. They get on the bus, and they make the trip to, I think it's New Mexico, to go to the mother's funeral. And while they're there, they encounter a world that they're not all that familiar with, a world of fast food, a world of people doing things that they've never seen before. Remember, they live in the woods. They're not really that good with social interaction with people who are not relatives of theirs. And so it's a very interesting look at how these people can get by on a daily basis when they're in the real world. Frank Langella is great as the dead woman's father. Anne Dowd plays the mother. She's also very good in this. There's also an extended scene with the dead mother's sister and brother-in-law, who are played by Catherine Hahn and Steve Zahn. And it's very interesting to see them with their two teenage boys dealing with this family that lives in the woods, and how there's a real culture clash, because, you know, these kids, they play Xbox and PlayStation all day long. They love that sort of stuff. The kids who grew up in the woods have never seen or heard anything like this. And so you see that giant culture clash going on between them. I'm telling you right now, it sounds like a weird movie, but it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. It is original. I've never seen a movie quite like this. This movie is going to spark debates among people who see it about what's appropriate and what's not appropriate in parenting, what's right in education, and how you handle grief, and how you hold a family together in the midst of the oddest time of their lives. I'm giving this movie an 8.5 out of 10.
Really?
I consider it one of the best movies that I've seen this year. It's called Captain Fantastic. Do not let the title scare you away. It's a grown-up movie. Don't take the kids to see this mm-hmm. one, because there's stuff in there they probably should not be exposed to, including the opening scene where you see them kill and strip a deer in the woods. It's very, very graphic. And there's other stuff. There's some nudity that takes place later on in the movie that would not be appropriate for kids. But I will tell you that this movie moved me and made me think a lot, and I really, really enjoyed it. It's called Captain Fantastic. My best recommendation of the movie this weekend.
So it's a bad title. What would your title have been?
I have no idea.
Family in the Woods.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Or just Family. Mm-hmm. Or
Not Captain Fantastic.
Yeah, because Captain Fantastic, in the summertime particularly, or you know, even if you release this in October or November, people wouldn't know what that was. They're going to see that title, and they're going to think, oh, it's a superhero movie.
Yeah.
And it absolutely is not. So skip that.
A last movie, just to let you know about, is Hunt for the Wilder People, Wilder mm-hmm. People. Mm-hmm. Takes place in New Zealand. A young boy that had been raised essentially on hip-hop and the foster care system is transported to a family in the countryside of New Zealand. Tragedy strikes, and he's left on his own with just the family dog named Tupac. And they go off in the wilderness, and they're then being hunted down by the police because it's a kid and a dog on their own, and that's not good. So I know nothing else about it other than that. It's not getting a super wide release.
Okay.
So there you go.
All right. I have a Netflix suggestion for you mm-hmm. from a movie I reviewed just 2 months ago, and it's already out on Netflix. It's called Elvis and Nixon. Dan, when I first talked about this, you sounded like you really wanted to see it. Did you ever see it?
No, I didn't.
Okay, well, it's streaming on Netflix now. I strongly recommend it with Mike Shannon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd like to see President Nixon.
He plays Elvis Presley, the actor Michael Shannon, not that Mike Shannon. And Kevin Spacey plays President Richard Nixon. And it's a true story. Dan's always asking, is this based on real life?
Yes.
No, this is based on a real incident where Elvis Presley showed up at the northwest gate of the White House with a six-page letter and wanted to meet President Nixon in 1971 and...
Be deputized
as an undercover federal officer. It sounds bizarre. It sounds like the sort of thing you would make up for a comedy, but it's real, and the movie is wonderful, and the impersonations are very, very good, and the whole thing is really, really entertaining. It's called Elvis and Nixon. It's streaming on Netflix right now. And that's all the showbiz stuff we have for you this week here on the Big 550 KTRS. Welcome to the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris, Dan Strauss, and Ian Geiser are here with me. And you can be here as well if you want to play the Harris Challenge. Call us right now, 314-969-KTRS, toll-free 1-888-550-KTRS, or on some cell phones, *KTRS. We'll bring you right in here. We'll see if you've been paying attention to the news of the week and also some other trivia categories, which we will determine when we turn on the semi-random category computer, which is right here. So it's mixing up the categories, and you get to choose from them if you get in here in time, and you'll be playing not just for prize, also for a fabulous prize package chosen especially for you by this guy.
Yay! The Prize Man!
Have 1 dozen free donuts.
Donuts.
From the Old Town Donut Shop.
Donuts.
In Florissant and in Cottleville.
Cottleville.
Peroni's Pizza. We have a gift card for Peroni's Pizzeria. They have two locations, one in Florissant and one in St. Peter's at 70 and 79. Or you might want to pick Skyview movie passes for the Skyview Drive-In.
Yeah, the Skyview Drive-In is on the North Belt West in Belleville, open 7 nights a week. And if you go in the next week, you can see 2 movies on screen one, Ice Age, Collision Course, and Secret Life of Pets. That's a good double bill for the kids.
Yeah.
And on screen two, it's the sci-fi double bill of Star Trek Beyond and the new Ghostbusters, all at the Skyview Drive-In in Belleville.
That's right. Also, we're going to throw in this. We have a pair of tickets to see Air Supply July 29th at the Family Arena. Tickets are available at the Family Arena box office, or you can get them online at metrotix.com.
And if you get all the questions right on the Harris Challenge, we call that a clean sweep and give you a bonus.
Well, that's right, Paul. We'll give you a bonus gift certificate to Candice's Italian Restaurant and Bar at Holloway and Manchester in Baldwin. Candice's offers drive-in, carry-out, catering, and pizza delivery. Go to candices.net.
Okay, those are the prizes. Now let's meet the contestants, led by our very first contestant today. Hello, Ted.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for asking. Everybody who gets on the Harris Challenge gets a unique broadcast opportunity known as the 5-second cheap plug opportunity. Go right ahead.
I am on my way driving to Ohio to celebrate my parents' 65th anniversary this weekend.
Wow. Congratulations to them. I say that as somebody who's only halfway there with my own wife. 65 years. Holy cow. Congratulations to them. Hope you have a nice weekend. I've turned on the semi-random category computer already, and I can see the categories are: have you been paying attention? Category 2, you call that a convention? And category 3, the late, great Gary Marshall. What do you want?
I'll take Gary Marshall.
Okay. 60 seconds on the clock, Ted. We start with the one-pointer, work our way up to the five-pointer. You must get at least 8 points to win or suffer the consequences. Let's play the Harris Challenge. Which Gary Marshall movie was about a hooker spending a week with a rich businessman? Hold on, Ted, are you there?
Yeah, Yeah, I'm losing a little bit. Pretty Woman?
Yep, Pretty Woman is correct. Okay. In the TV version of The Odd Couple that he produced in the 70s, who were the two male stars?
Jack Klugman and Tony Randall.
Correct. For 1 point each, name the three TV shows he spun off from Happy Days.
Laverne and Shirley, Joni Loves Chachi, and Pat.
In what 2001 movie did Anne Hathaway find out that she is the heir apparent to the throne of Genovia?
Oh, my kids would know that. Something Princess Pat.
In his movie Nothing in Common, who starred as the ad executive son of Jackie Gleason and Eva Marie Saint? Take a guess, Ted.
Gary Marshall himself.
No, it was Tom Hanks. By the way, that's a terrific little movie, Nothing in Common.
Was the Anne Hathaway one Ella Enchanted?
No, it was The Princess Diaries.
Oh, wow.
And the other spinoff from Happy Days was Mork and Mindy.
Wow.
It started with an episode of Happy Days in which
Fonzie
has a dream and has to fight this alien played by Robin Williams, Mork. That's right. That's the first time we heard Nanu Nanu. All right, so let's see how you did here, Ted. You got Laverne and Shirley and Joni Loves Chachi for one each, Tony Randall and Jack Klugman for one each, and the Pretty Woman for one each. That's a total of five, and as you know, if you don't get to eight, you don't win. Instead, you get punished. And I thought after the week that we've just had, it would be only appropriate if we had a Trump punish you. Here now is Tiffany Trump with a song incredibly auto-tuned. So auto-tuned, it's almost impossible to hear her singing the lyrics to this song called Like a Bird. What? What? Okay, I have no idea if this young woman is talented or not because they auto-tuned her within an inch of her life there.
Yes.
It's ridiculous. And that's what you had to sit through, Ted. I'm sorry about that, but I hope you have a great weekend. And, again, happy anniversary to your folks.
Okay, thanks, guys. Take care.
Thank you very much. Here's our second contestant. Hi, Larry.
Hey, Paul. How are you?
Good. You want to plug something?
No, I'm AM in the PM.
Thank you. We always appreciate that. What category would you like? Have you been paying attention? You call that a convention or this day in history?
Let's go for this day in history.
Okay. 60 seconds on the clock, Larry. Let's play the Harris Challenge. What was the name of the cannibal serial killer captured in Milwaukee July 22nd, 1991?
Oh, my goodness. Let's pass on that.
Which American won the second of his three Tour de France championships, July 22nd, 1990?
Lance Armstrong.
Greg LeMond. Which Englishman's rock career was kickstarted when his debut album, My Aim Is True, was released on July 22nd, 1977?
What's the first part of that question?
Which Englishman's rock career was kickstarted when his debut album, My Aim Is True, was released on this day in 77?
Oh, my goodness. David Bowie?
Elvis Costello. Which presidential candidate who lost to Bill Clinton in 1996 was born on this day in 1923?
That would be Bob Dole.
Correct. What were the names of Saddam Hussein's two sons who were killed on this day in 2003?
Pass on that. Go to number one.
It was Uday and Kusei were their names. And number one, the cannibal and serial killer captured in Milwaukee in 1991 was Jeffrey Dahmer.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Larry, all you got is 4 points for Bob Dole. And that means you have to be trumped as well.
Who is this singing?
This is Tiffany Trump.
That's awful.
Now, who's the mother of Tiffany Trump?
I don't know.
I know Ivanka comes from Ivana, and I think the boys come from Ivana. So
I think this is Marla Maples.
Marla Maples.
Yeah. Marla Maples, I think it's correct.
I think that's correct also. All right, Larry, have a great weekend. Thanks for playing.
Okay, thank you.
We are 0-2 so far. Let's see what Kathy can do. Hi.
Hi.
Welcome to the show. Tell us about yourself with your five-second cheap plug opportunity.
I'm on a dog walk. And AM in the PM.
Thank you. Kathy, what do you want? We have you been paying attention? You call that a convention? Or, no, really, have you been paying attention?
Have you been paying attention?
All right, 60 seconds on the clock. Let's play the Harris Challenge. Which city did the NBA move next year's All-Star game away from because of the state's discriminatory transgender bathroom law?
Cincinnati?
Charlotte. Which TV news executive was forced out of his job this week because of sexual harassment claims by several women who worked for him?
The guy from Fox, but I can't remember his name.
All right, you want to go to the three-pointer?
Yes.
Which White House resident did carpool karaoke with James Corden this week?
Michelle.
Michelle Obama is right. Which electronic device, popular in the 70s and 80s, will be manufactured for the last time by a Japanese company at the end of this month? Is it the VCR, the Walkman, or an 8-track recorder?
VCR.
Correct. Which star of Charmed and Beverly Hills 90210 made news this week by posting photos of her shaving her head because she has breast cancer?
Donna Martin or whatever.
Shannon Doherty was her name. How about that head of Fox?
Yeah. I can't remember. But I could see him. We called him Grandpa.
We called him Jowls. His name is Roger Ailes.
Yes.
You have to feel sorry for the guy. He's only going to get $40 million in severance.
No, I don't feel sorry for him.
Plus a two-year... You know what? I'm with you. I actually saw quite a few men come out this week and say, he never did anything with me. That's because you're a man.
No.
Yeah. And like Brett Baer and Britt Hume and Geraldo Rivera said, no, this can't possibly be true. I always want to ask guys like that when there's sexual harassment claims about somebody, A, why don't you shut up because you don't know? And B, if this were your wife or your daughter,
right,
wouldn't that change things considerably?
And yes.
You know what the big deal was for Roger Ailes? Gretchen Carlson's lawsuit 2 weeks ago, that started things. But when Megyn Kelly, the star of Fox News, came out this week, that was going to be the end. When she said that he sexually harassed her, you know, it's okay if you do something with Gretchen Carlson at Fox. She's gone. But Megyn Kelly's the star in the future. You don't do things with her. And that's all that was for him. So
well, Trump even made up with her, Megyn Kelly. I mean, she's the star.
Yeah. By the way, I have friends who are big Hillary fans who are happy that Roger Ailes is out. I don't think they're going to be happy when he signs on with the Trump campaign and helps them run things. Because he can't go to another TV network. What else is he going to do?
Nope. He's going to sit back and look at the women, I guess. All the Trump women.
And yeah. Kathy, you got 4 points for the VCR. By the way, the company's called the Funai Corporation. But the Funai must have run out because they're not making VCRs anymore. I didn't even know they were still making them.
Yeah. We talked about that the other day. It was shocking.
Last year, they sold 750,000 of them.
Right.
But they say they can't get parts for them anymore. So that's it. The VCR is finally over. Kathy, I'm sorry you had to... I'm sorry you're going to have to sit through this because you're getting punished as well. Here's Tiffany Trump. What was that? I think she's saying like a bird, like a bird, like a bird. Okay. Thank you, Tiffany. And thank you, Kathy. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too.
You're welcome. Let's see if we can get a winner here today. Chris, it's on you now.
Thank you.
Tell us about yourself with your 5-second cheap plug opportunity. Suck up to the boss. Shout out to the family. You use it for commercial endorsement, whatever you like.
Well, I guess I would say, since I only have two things to look at, I'm going to say my answers do not necessarily reflect my political views.
Okay. So of the two categories, Chris, which would you like? We have, will you call that a convention or, no, really, have you been paying attention?
I do not pay attention, so I'm going to try the convention thing.
All right.
And wish me luck, please.
60 seconds on the clock. Good luck, Chris. Let's play the Harris Challenge. Which state is Vice Presidential candidate Mike Pence the governor of?
Indiana.
Correct. Who said this week, I am not in the habit of supporting people who attack my wife and attack my father?
Bush.
Ted Cruz.
No.
Which Queen song did Donald Trump use for his entrance Monday night despite the band's strong objections?
We Are the Champions.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. Which star of Charles in Charge was one of the celebrity speakers, celebrity in quotes, at the RNC this week?
Oh, my gosh. Pass on that one.
Which Trump employee took the blame for including lines plagiarized from Michelle Obama in Melania Trump's speech?
Oh, pass on that one, too.
All right, back to the four-pointer. Which star of Charles in Charge was one of the celebrity speakers at the convention this week?
The butler.
It was Scott Baio.
Oh, my God.
The butler.
The butler always did it.
Was there a butler on Charles in Charge?
I don't think so.
I never watched the show.
No,
I don't
think so. Mr. Belvedere.
Yeah, Mr. Belvedere had one, and the nanny had one. I don't think Charles. You know what Charles in Charge did have? An extremely young and cute Meg Ryan.
Yeah.
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air had one.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what I was thinking of. I'm sorry.
Batman had Alfred.
Oh, really? I'm sorry.
You know, this may be a category for the future. I'm writing this down. TV shows.
With butlers.
Yeah. And then I'll throw him a curve. I'll throw in that one that had Brett Butler.
Grace, I'm glad I could help.
Grace, what was it? Grace on fire? No.
Grace under fire.
Grace under fire, yeah. Yeah.
So I'm just saying my answers do reflect my political views.
Apparently they do. The Trump employee who took the blame for Melania's plagiarism was Meredith McIver. You got 1 point for Mike Pence and 3 points for Queen. By the way, the Stones are upset with the Trumps, too, because at the end, after his speech last night, he played, well, he didn't play, but they played You Can't Always Get What You Want, which I thought was very funny, considering this is the Republican Party that really didn't want Trump.
I know.
And you play You Can't Always Get What You Want? Oh, just rub their nose in it, Donald.
That's huge.
So, Chris, you got yourself 1 and 3. That's 4 points. And you also have to be trumped. Here we go. Now, that's not Tiffany.
Oh, no. That must be
that's
bad.
Somebody else.
It was that special guest star.
Featuring that.
Yeah. FT. That's what it always says. All right, get it off. You know what? Cue it up at the beginning just in case.
All right.
Because we haven't had a quintuple punishment day in a long time.
No.
Chris, I'm glad you played. I hope you have a good weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Here's our fifth contestant and the only person standing between us and 5X. Here's Ken. Welcome to the show, Ken.
Good afternoon.
Hi. Go ahead and plug something.
Ask Hillary, Bill won't.
What?
Okay.
Oh, ask Hillary, Bill won't.
Okay, fine. We have one category left here, Ken. It's called No, Really, Have You Been Paying Attention? Now, before we get going, I'm going to ask you to do me a favor. Stop breathing directly into the phone. Thank you. It's just a little personal thing of mine. Because I'm wearing headphones that are cranked up really loud, and it sounds like there's a tornado on the air. All right. No, really, have you been paying attention, Ken? 60 seconds. Let's play the Harris Challenge. In what European city did a gunman go on a shooting spree at a shopping center today?
Berlin.
Munich. Which baseball team's database did former St. Louis Cardinals scouting director plead guilty to hacking this week?
Astros.
Correct. Which Elon Musk company successfully landed a Falcon rocket back on the launch pad at Cape Canaveral again this week?
SpaceX.
Correct. Which former host of The Daily Show returned to Stephen Colbert's Late Show last night to rant about Fox News?
Bill Maher.
Jon Stewart. All right, you need this for the win. Name one of the two NFL teams that were coached over 13 seasons by Dennis Green, who died last night at age 67.
Minnesota Vikings.
And the Arizona Cardinals. Ken, congratulations. You got the 2, the 3, the 5, and the breathing for a total of 10 with a check mark. And you're our winner today. Congratulations. Hang on, and Dan will tell you how you get your prizes. That's the Harris Challenge. We do it every Friday right around 5:15, exclusively here on the Big 550 KTRS and worldwide via the free KTRS app. And all the archives from previous Harris Challenges are available on my website, harrisonline.com.
It's Aloha Friday, no work till Monday.
Oh, yeah.
It's Aloha Friday.
Yes, it is.
No work till Monday.
It This is the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. This portion brought to you by Annie Gunn's Restaurant on the Smokehouse Market in the Chesterfield Valley. One of the great sit-down restaurants for fine dining in our area, Annie Gunn's. I'm not a wine drinker, but my wife is, and so we know that they have an extensive wine collection there. And wonderful entrees and appetizers. And if you don't have time set aside for a fancy evening out, well, and maybe you want to get some stuff to go, right next door, that's the Smokehouse Market. Meat, fish, chicken, salads, soups, sandwiches, all there at the Smokehouse right next to Annie Gunn's in the Chesterfield Valley. And they sponsor this gentleman in Southern California, Mr. Mike Evans.
Give it up.
Give it up.
Hello, Mike. How are you today?
I'm fine.
Good.
Nice and warm there?
A little bit.
We got lucky today. There were some early storms, so it kind of cooled everything down for a little bit.
Yeah, but over the weekend, they're talking about heat index of 110.
We got, this isn't heat index, we got into the car this afternoon. We had to go out to a shopping center. We got into the car, 122 degrees in the car, 114 outside the car.
Wow. Yeah, I told a story earlier. I was in Dallas a couple of days ago, and when I got back into my car, my iPhone stopped working and had a thing on the screen that said the phone is too hot now. It has to cool down.
I've had that happen to my phone before.
I would bet it with temperatures like that. I'd never seen that before.
Yeah.
Wow.
Pop quiz question. Name the name of the hot actress who sings, plays the piano, the flute, the guitar, stand-up bass. Amelia Clark, Blake Lively, Jessica Simpson, Ellen Page. Three movie reviews, homie. Ready to go?
Yep.
Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
Did you like it? Did you see it?
I did like it, and I, for me, it was just okay.
Opens today everywhere. I wanted to hate it. I expected to hate it. However, I didn't hate it. Captain Kirk, Spock, the whole gang, just seeing him back. The story, the script was pretty good. Chris Pine, I really, really liked anyway. Sci-fi action thriller. PG-13, 2 hours long, 2.5 stars.
Okay, we're on the same page.
Okay, Lights Out.
I didn't see it.
Okay, if you are into bloodthirsty, supernatural, terrifying spirits, well, then, love, Lights Out's for you. There you go. Rated PG, it'll scare the dickens out of you, 81 minutes, 3 stars.
Okay.
Don't Think Twice.
I never heard of that. It's not opening here.
Is the best of the week. It is in limited release. Look for it. Be out everywhere within a month. When the cast of a top New York comedy club is offered their own TV show, things are great, but then they realize that not all the comics that work there are going to make the cut. Hilarious, touching, the deep and soul-searching. And the question is asked, are comedians happy people? I think you've probably interviewed probably as many as I have. I mean,
yeah.
They're a very odd bunch.
Yes, they are. Now I recognize this movie because I saw Keegan-Michael Key promoting this on Colbert the other night. And I'm looking forward to seeing it, but it's not opening anytime soon here.
Ah.
And by the way, speaking of movies, I want to thank you. I think it was last week or maybe 2 weeks ago, you recommended Captain Fantastic with Viggo Mortensen.
Uh-huh.
I went to see it, and I strongly recommend it. It's one of my favorite movies of the year.
Yeah, it's great.
It really, really is.
It's great.
And by the way, horrible title. Horrible title.
Captain Fantastic?
Yeah, because people are going to think it's a superhero movie.
That's what I said in my reviews. Like, even if you think it's a superhero or you have other thoughts, you will never figure out, you will never be able to predict what this movie is about.
Yeah, it's really good.
Democrat Party, Hillary's Democrat Party. 4 stars.
That's a movie?
It's a movie.
Oh.
It's a document. It's a documentary. Came out today. Should be out there today.
No, never heard of it.
Really?
Yeah.
Hillary's Democrat Party.
Okay.
Okay. Let's see what else I have for you. Is it true? Trump had considered Ted Cruz. He told people to be one of his first picks on the Supreme Court should he be elected until Cruz pulled that thing off Thursday night.
Yeah.
Boy, that was a dumb thing to do.
Yeah, it was.
Just, you know. Everybody hated him anyway.
Why did Trump allow him? Trump knew ahead of time he wasn't going to endorse him.
I think Trump comes out winning on this.
Yeah,
like, you know what? He's a fair guy.
I guess
he knew he wasn't going to. He said, okay, the hell with him. I'm still going
to
win.
He could use that to come out in the tunnel like he did and start until everybody turned their back on
him and the boo started.
You know, I remember maybe it was early this year or late last year, you told us that Ted Cruz is one of the most hated people in Washington.
Yeah.
And this didn't help him, did it?
No, not at all.
No.
Everybody hates Ted Cruz. Let's see, Dayton history. I always thought this was... Hello, excuse me.
Yeah, what happened to your voice?
I don't know. Well, I have one more other thing. World security agencies are meeting over this weekend from all over the world about security for the Olympics.
Mm.
There's a lot of worry about that.
Dayton
history, July 22nd, 1980. Well, really, I always thought this was one of the most silly, ridiculous labor strikes that ever took place in America. On this date, 1980, AFTRA, American Federation of Television Radio Artists, and Screen Actors Guild went on strike demanding more money.
Yeah.
I was in New York and was walking into this building, and it had nothing to do with going to a gig or anything. But I crossed the picket line going into this big building, and this was in New York. And one of the protesters, it was a woman, was wearing a mink coat. I thought, how ironic! They're holding out for more money, and she's out here wearing a mink coat.
Have you ever heard my imitation of an AFTRA lawyer negotiating with management?
No.
It goes like this. We absolutely have to have these things in the contract. We are not going to sign the contract unless we get these things. We're not going to give you those things. Okay. That's how powerful our union is.
Yeah. SAG's a little more powerful. You're talking about AFTRA?
Yeah.
Or are you talking about SAG?
No, AFTRA.
Yeah.
Weakest union in America.
Who plays the piano and the flute, guitar, and the bass? Jessica Simpson, Blake Lively, Amelia Clark, or Ellen Page?
I'm going Amelia Clark. How about you, Dan?
I'll go Amelia Clark.
Ellen Page.
The answer is Amelia Clark.
Thank you.
Ooh.
Unbelievable. And finally, here, come on out, take care of your business. It's Aloha Friday. No work till Monday. We're going to play today, Aloha Friday. Yokalani, Kalani, and the Oli K, Lukaku, and the Kaka, and the Aka, and the Hui Hui Ho. Kill the whale, Kaimuki, Kaka Ara, Hui Ho.
Anana Koli, Makawani, and the Ona, Nana Lula, Hawaii.
There's Mike Evans. I've got an all Pokemon Go version of Knuckleheads in the News. First, I have two things I would like you to watch because I think you'll enjoy them. Number one is on my website, harrisonline.com, the picture of the day. I just showed this to Ian and Dan. It is called Magical Porta Potty. It's from the people at Improv Everywhere who essentially set up a porta potty at a big concert, you know, one of these big festival concerts with lots of people in their 20s, and they're all there, and people go up to this porta potty, and they open the door, and there's a big surprise for them on the other side. I'm not going to spoil the surprise, but would you agree with me this is must-see video?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yes.
The other one is something on Netflix from comedian Jim Jefferies. I told Ian about this last week.
I did. I watched it.
Would you agree with me that the 12-minute chunk he does on his child and whether he should be vaccinated and the autism part is one of the best comedic things this year?
Very funny.
I saw Jim Jefferies do this whole routine for this whole special, which is called Freedom. D-U-M-B. I saw him do it at the pageant earlier this year on that tour, which they didn't videotape it here, but they videotaped it elsewhere. It is about an hour and a half long, and it is some of the most biting and funniest comedy I've seen from anybody in a long time. And I thank you, by the way, because a couple of years ago, you turned me on to him on one of his other specials.
Yes.
This new one is on Netflix now. It's streaming. It's called Freedom from Jim Jefferies. Now time for Knuckleheads in the News, brought to you by Laclede Cab, the AM and the PM Cab Company, 314-652-3456, or download their free STL Taxi app. Here we go, spanning the globe for stories wacky enough to qualify as Knuckleheads in the News. Last week when I had a Pokemon Go story in Knuckleheads, I told you this was just the beginning. Today, I have six, count them, six Pokemon Go story, starting in Milford, Michigan, where William Wilcox was tracking down targets on the Pokemon Go app, didn't notice that he'd walked directly up to a police station where there was a warrant out for his arrest. This wasn't any ordinary police station. It's also a gym where players can train their Pokemon and challenge gym leaders. I don't know what that means, but it's in this town of Milford, which is a small town. So when the officers saw him outside, they knew him. They recognized him, booked him on the spot because they wanted him on a warrant for failing to appear in court for a breaking and entering charge. Police Chief Tom Lindbergh says he either forgot he had a warrant out for his arrest or was just too busy with the app. Story number two from Bosnia, where there's an agency pleading with Pokemon Go players to be more aware of their surroundings while playing the game because distracted users have been unknowingly wandering into areas full of landmines. The agency's Facebook page says, "We received information that there are cases where users of the Pokemon Go app in Bosnia are entering into mined forests and other risky areas in order to find Pokemon. We ask all citizens to respect the signs warning them about mines and don't go in those areas." The mines are left over from a conflict in the 1990s in Bosnia. Story three from Wisconsin. Separate instances. Two guys crashed their cars while playing Pokemon Go late Saturday night in the same town. And they were both drunk, too. Benjamin Chappie drove into a pole. Jordan Spiegel drove off the road and into a tree. Not only had they both had beer in them, but they both were playing the app while driving. Both treated at a hospital for minor injuries, cited for drunk driving and distracted driving. Baltimore, Maryland. A man in a Toyota RAV4 clipped the side of a parked patrol car early Monday. An officer went after him. Driver pulled over less than a mile down the road, apologized, and said, "I'm sorry, officer. I was playing Pokemon Go on my phone. That's what I get for playing this dumbass game." Fortunately, nobody heard. Westport, Connecticut. Two young men looking for Pokemon in the prayer garden of a local Catholic church instead came across a naked woman who was vandalizing the property. They say the naked woman in the garden had pulled lights from the ground, overturned a statue and benches, and was throwing garbage from her car into the baptismal pond. The Pokemon Go guys called the cops, who came and picked up the woman, who was taken to a local hospital for observation. No word on whether the guys found any Pokemon characters there. And we finish in East Greenwich, New Jersey, where a woman called 911 to get help after getting stuck in a tree in a cemetery. Firefighters went and rescued her, said, "By the way, what were you doing in the tree?" And she admitted she'd been playing Pokemon Go. They helped her get down, and one of the firefighters, who's a fan of the game too, said, "You know, the app doesn't work better the higher you go. It's better just to stay on the ground." And no, that's your all Pokemon Go knuckleheads in the news for this week. Thanks to Matt Burrows and Jim Hewer for their contributions. Whenever you see a knuckleheads in the news worthy story, email it to paul@harrisonline.com. And that's all the time we have for today. I hope you have a great weekend, and I hope it's air-conditioned. Dan, you got a gig you got to plug this weekend?
No, we are off this weekend, but next weekend I'll let you know what's going on, because we're doing a winery tour and playing at the last winery with a bus full of people in Herman, Missouri.
All right, details on that next week here on the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the Afternoon. On behalf of Dan and Ian and Colin and Tim, I'm Paul Harris. Thanks for listening.